Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We move now to New Jersey, where rescue operations are underway in Atlantic City, which suffered significant damage. Freelance reporter Scott Gurian is on the ground in New Jersey. He's been giving us updates since yesterday morning. You're in Long Branch. Scott, what are you seeing?
No, I'm actually in Red Bank right now, a little farther north. If you drive around, first of all, there's some areas that don't look bad at all. Other areas where there's lots of downed trees and tree limbs making roads impassable. So, you know, it takes quite a bit of navigation to get anywhere. Power lines down as well. I made my way up to Red Bank here a little while ago, and it looks deceivingly okay when you just drive around. But then you go down. I went down to the dock, spoke to some people down at the Irwin Marina. The waters have since receded. But they said last night floodwaters were pretty high, maybe 5-6 feet or so. The son of the owner took me inside the big garage where they repair some of the boats. And in his words, it looked like a nuclear bomb went off. And I think I have to concur. Just stuff strewn all over, just a total wreck in there. Sheens of gasoline and oil on the ground, you know, rainbow sheens. Docks all over, up on the land, washed up, several other docks kind of twisted and turned, bent, destroyed. It was really a mess.
What's the condition of the basic infrastructure slightly inland, talking about gas lines, talking about power lines?
I don't know about gas lines because I guess they're mostly buried underground. Certainly power lines are down here and there. Drove by a traffic light that was smashed, had fallen off and was down in the road. You know, certainly that will present a danger as people are making their way out. Saw a lot of emergency crews as well making the rounds.
What's the spirit that you're finding among people there? A sense of fear and a real feeling that catastrophe has come through, or more of a resolve to build back once again, clean up once again?
Well, I'm sure it would depend greatly on who it is you speak to and where they are, how badly they were hit. You know, daylight just came a few hours ago, so people are just, you know, sort of starting to venture out now, see, you know, the aftermath of what went on. The winds are they've died down a lot, certainly, from last night, though, there are still some strong gusts, some, you know, rain coming back now a little bit. I was earlier in Oceanport. I was driving down a small street and saw a woman sobbing in front of a business. So I stopped, got a chance to speak to her. Her name was Renita Kirk. She's a small business owner, and she runs this business by herself. They do promotional advertising. They'll put your company's logo on a shirt or hat or so forth. She lives nearby. It's kind of on a little peninsula there, and they have seen some flooding in the past, though she didn't think it would be as bad as it was. You could see the line where the floodwaters came up, maybe 3 feet high or so. A lot of her goods in there, as well as her computers, all damaged. She doesn't know if insurance will cover it. She says her lease is up in December, and she's certainly not planning on renewing it.
Oh, what a sense of helplessness. Widespread power outages where you are, Scott?
Yeah, certainly. I haven't seen a single traffic light operating this morning, so, you know, people making their way around slow. One estimate I heard, 81% of all people's power is out here in Monmouth County, New Jersey. So it'll probably take a very long time before it's all restored.
And you've been driving around since yesterday. How's the gas situation there?
I've still got a little more than half a tank. My car's been a lifesaver because it's what I'm charging all my electronic devices off of because, you know, I don't have any power from anywhere else. So I'm still good on gas. And, yeah, I guess I haven't seen any gas stations today that are open, but I think I should be good for a while.
All right. Scott Gurian, resourceful reporter there, freelance reporter in New Jersey, talking about the story in that state where the storm actually came ashore. We want your Hurricane Sandy stories. We have listener Mike in Carver, Massachusetts. He weathered the storm in one piece. What's your story, Mike?
Definitely the winds were extremely harsh. And I mean, it's harsh to the point that I noticed a tree right outside of our home just literally bend over at just a one gust of wind. So when it calmed down a little bit, I went and took it down because it had gone straight to my daughter's window. So I took that tree down. The power went out. I think it was out probably at least 5 or 6 hours. And the siding that goes down under the home, so it's about 3 feet from the ground, just literally blew right off.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This is The Takeaway, broadcasting from New York City, staying with the situation in New Jersey, where Superstorm Sandy, they're calling it, came ashore last night. Bob Henley joins us, investigative reporter for our co-producer, WNYC. Bob, you've been staying safe. Is the power on where you are?
The power's off. We've been doing damage assessment last night, through the night, and through this morning. I've driven to the county seat in Morris County, Morristown, about 10 miles from my house. I'm trying to follow up on a story we broke last night about the tragic death of a young couple who were killed in their pickup truck when a tree 36 inches around came down. Their two children, we don't really know if they're their children, but there were two small children that survived. So I'm going to the prosecutor's office now to get more on that story.
So, Bob, widen out a little bit. Give us the big picture in New Jersey. You've reported a lot on infrastructure, cutbacks, on changes in infrastructure and emergency preparedness. Right. This was all tested overnight.
Well, one of the things is that PSE&G, Public Service Electric and Gas, is the largest provider of power, over 2 million households. That's in the northern part of the state. They have a record number, 1.2 million households and businesses out this morning. And they have two problems. They are very much near Newark Bay, so there has been subsurface station power backup generators were taken out by the surge. And then in the highlands, in the area that is, more rural, I've seen utility poles snap like dry pasta right in half. So the big challenge for all of them now is to get out and triage. The weather seems to be cooperating, but it's impossible to get around. That's the problem. It took me twice as long just to make that journey I described to you. And again, the point you raised with Scott was important. It made me think to pull over and get gas because I didn't find an open gas station anywhere until the last 2 minutes ago.
I'm just trying to look out for you guys. We're talking with Bob Henley, investigative reporter from WNYC. Out in New Jersey, covering the big picture in New Jersey. Do you know anything about the rescue operation that Governor Christie was talking about through much of the night regarding Atlantic City?
Well, this gets political because Lorenzo Lankford is a Democratic mayor of Atlantic City. Governor Christie is a Republican high profile. Atlantic City has been something the governor's focused on to try to revive the gaming there. And so he, according to some people, stepped on Lankford's toes to begin with. And so Christie on Saturday gave a mandatory evacuation order for what we call the Barrier Islands, which goes from Sandy Hook all the way down to Cape May. That included Atlantic City. The governor said one thing, and apparently, and I'm trying to get to Mayor Lankford now, Lankford, according to Christie, gave folks the impression they should stay put where they were in Atlantic City. So we really had a kind of geopolitical dysfunction, not on the scale of Katrina, but some of the same dynamic at work with incoherent messaging. And so the governor was very frank that they were going to have to wait till morning because they didn't want to put first responders, lives at risk to deal with a situation that could have been avoided, according to the governor. We're going to try to track down Mayor Lankford later.
Can you make a comparison, Bob Henley, between the efforts that are going on in New York now and what the scale of the recovery operation and the damage control operation is going to be in the state of New Jersey over the next few days?
Well, I think it will be unprecedented because you have this issue of the inability to move around. On top of that, you have we've had trouble with cell service calling into New York City. The transportation network is pretty much shut down at this point. I'm here in New Jersey Transit train station. The only activity is dozens and dozens of day laborers who are going to get a lot of work, let me tell you. And then on top of that, I will say one thing. what we did see here was President Obama do pre-emergency declarations, John, so that is going to be a big relief to local county governments. Why does that matter? Because there was a lot of preparation that was done, digging out ancient culverts that were substandard, but at least local towns that are strapped already well into overtime through the weekend, digging out those channels. Now, because the president worked closely with the governors in the Northeast, there was a declaration in place, so hopefully 70% of those costs will be covered by this federal government. So clearly, the 1-2 punch of Irene and that freak Halloween blizzard is making a difference.
Talking with Bob Henley, investigative reporter for our co-producer WNYC, who's been giving us some details of some tragic deaths in the state of New Jersey. Before we go, you managed to determine that Public Service Electric and Gas, the utility in New Jersey, is reporting a record unprecedented amount of damage to the infrastructure.
Right. Twice what they experienced with Irene.
And what's that going to mean in terms of getting power back on to some of these heavily populated communities?
Well, it's going to mean people are going to have to be patient, and the degree to which you prepared before this storm is the degree to which you're not going to feel really convenient. The problem here is that this is when we see people do things that are ill-advised and have caused death in both the case of Irene and the Halloween storm, where this is not the time to go out and get a generator and pull it out of the box, John, and figure out how it works, because we've had instances where people don't properly vent these generators. You don't put it in your garage. It should be 25 to 30 feet away from the structure that you're living in so it's properly ventilated so you don't asphyxiate yourself and your family with carbon monoxide.
All right, Bob Henley, reporter for our producing partner, WNYC, on the scene in New Jersey, both the big picture and the picture on the shoreline, where extraordinary damage, people saying it's catastrophic damage on the Jersey shore there. Bob Henley, thanks so much. Let's give you a scale of what the federal relief effort is so far. FEMA has said that response teams are in place, have moved more than 600,000 liters of water, 490,000 of meals ready to eat, and dozens of blankets and cots into place from Washington to the Northeast. 400 generators en route to hospitals and other large facilities. FEMA said support response teams are in place, and the infrastructure from Washington and the federal response is beginning to move into the Northeast. You're listening to The Takeaway. We want your stories on Hurricane Sandy. Tell us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We're doing fine here in New York, but stay with us. This is The Takeaway.